Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Jill Robbins, Alice Bryant, Bruce Alpert, and John Russell. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Taiwan says it will carry out exercises in the disputed South China Sea to practice search and rescue operations. Taiwan has described the exercises as humanitarian. Taiwan's Coast Guard announced the activities Sunday. The move is seen as an effort by Taiwan to show its willingness to ease tensions in the South China Sea. The drills will be carried out in the near future, depending on weather conditions, the Coast Guard said. They will take place near Taiping Island, also known as Itu Aba. Taiwan's Coast Guard directly administers Itu Aba, but it is also claimed by China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. The agency said in a statement that Taiwan's Navy might take part in the exercises. The Coast Guard said, currently, the Navy regularly patrols near Taiping Island. We don't rule out the Navy playing a supporting role in future humanitarian rescue drills being held near Taiping. The Coast Guard also said the exercises will include drills on reacting to shipwrecks and rescuing and providing relief to sailors. It did not say how many forces would take part and what kinds of equipment would be used. Taiwan has stated it operates a small military airport on Itu Aba. There is also a 10-bed hospital, a lighthouse, and solar panels valued at $129 million. The Coast Guard said Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, directed in July that Taiping Island be used as a humanitarian search and rescue center. Itu Aba is one of many islands, reefs, and other landforms in the disputed Spratly Islands chain in the South China Sea. China claims much of the South China Sea. It is an important seaway through which more than $5 trillion of trade moves each year. Vietnam, the Philippines, Malaysia, and Brunei also have competing claims in the sea. China's activities in the South China Sea have increased tensions with its neighbors, the United States and Japan. China has reclaimed land on several disputed reefs by dredging and built airfields and ports. In July, an international court ruled against China in a case brought by the Philippines. The court rejected China's historical claims to large areas of the South China Sea. Both China and Taiwan, which China considers a rebel province, rejected the ruling. Jonathan Spangler is director of the Taipei-based South China Sea think tank. He says Taiwan has been trying to position itself as a peacemaker in the South China Sea dispute. Humanitarian and search and rescue operations near Itu Aba would be a logical next step in backing up that political rhetoric with action, he said. I'm Mario Ritter.
President Barack Obama's public approval rating is higher now than at any time in his second term in office. Many observers think Obama will have high popularity ratings when he leaves office in January 2017. Yet, during his 8 years as president, the Democratic Party has suffered a sharp reduction in power at the national and state level. Republicans now hold more power nationwide than at any time since the 1920s. The Washington Post newspaper recently noted that the biggest stain on Obama's political legacy may turn out to be the decimation of the Democratic Party on his watch. Republican Donald Trump defeated Democrat Hillary Clinton in the presidential election this month. Barack Obama and his wife Michelle supported Clinton's campaign for the presidency. They made campaign appearances for her in many states.
But many Americans who had voted for Obama did not seem to support Clinton. The president told reporters, "I think it's fair to say that I was surprised by the election results." Voters also kept Republican lawmakers in control of the United States Senate and House of Representatives. A continued Republican majority in the House was expected, but many political experts thought Democrats would retake control of the Senate. Republicans will have as many as 52 or 53 of the 100 seats in the Senate and at least a 41-seat majority in the 435-seat House. Now, for the first time since 1928, Republicans will control the presidency, the House, the Senate, and most state governorships. They also have the chance to name a new Supreme Court justice. Some observers have noted that soon after 1928, the Great Depression began, causing economic hardship across the country. And soon after 2007, the Great Recession began.
In 2008, when Barack Obama was elected president, he received more votes than any candidate in U.S. history. Voters gave the Democratic Party a 257 to 178 majority in the House. The party also had its largest majority in the Senate since the 1970s, when Jimmy Carter was president. But 2 years later, in the 2010 congressional elections, Democrats suffered their largest losses since the 1920s. Republicans won 63 seats in the House, enough to gain control of the chamber. Republicans won 6 seats in the Senate, but did not gain a majority. However, in 2014, Republicans won enough seats to gain control of the Senate. They also claimed their largest majority in the House since World War II. While voters made major changes on the national level, the National Conference of State Legislatures notes that voters left the overall partisan landscape in state legislatures relatively unchanged.
Republicans gained power on the state level during the Obama presidency and expanded their control during the recent election. Nationwide, there are 7,383 legislative seats on the state government level. The country now has at least 816 fewer Democratic state legislators than there were in 2008, when Obama took office. In January, Republicans will hold 4,160 state legislative seats. That represents about 56% of the total. It also is the largest number of seats for Republicans since 1920. Republicans now control the House, Senate, and governorship in 24 states. That is a record for the party. Democrats control the state House, Senate, and governorship in just 5 states: California, Delaware, Hawaii, Oregon, and Rhode Island. That is the lowest number in the history of the Democratic Party. The United States now has the fewest number of divided government states since the 1940s. Experts say fewer American voters are splitting the ticket, voting for both Democrats and Republicans in the same election. Many voters now choose either all Republican or all Democratic candidates.
In 2008, 29 states had Democratic governors. Now, just 15 do. There are now 33 Republican governors, the most since 1998. In 1922, there were 34 Republican governors. In 1992, the Democrats controlled every state government in the 15 states that make up the American South. Now, Republicans control all of them. Almost two-thirds of all state legislators in the South are Republicans. As a result of the 2016 elections, Democratic lawmakers now control the New Mexico House and the Washington State Senate. There was a tie in the Connecticut and Delaware Senates. Democrats retook control of both chambers in the Nevada legislature. And Democrats now control every seat in the Hawaii Senate. This is the first time one party has controlled all the seats in a state chamber since 1980.
The National Conference of State Legislatures said Republican candidates won more offices in the recent election than experts had predicted. It said this happened at a time when many experts thought that Democrats would increase the number of seats they controlled in state legislatures. Republican control of state legislatures is important for many reasons. Dan DiOrio is a policy specialist at the National Conference of State Legislatures. He told DailySignal.com that despite total Republican control in Washington now, states are where the action is and will be for public policy that actually impacts people. The speed of the Republican Party's success began to increase in 2010. 2 years after Barack Obama was elected president. From 1952 to the early 2000s, Democrats controlled a majority of state legislatures. Many observers say it appears Democratic candidates cannot count on the support voters gave to Obama as recently as 2012. As the Washington Post noted, the impressive political operation that Obama built does not appear transferable to other Democrats and therefore may not live on past his presidency. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
The number of people in the United States without a home is down from 1 year ago. The total is nearly 550,000, about 3% lower than in 2015. The number comes from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The information comes after the United Nations reported that homelessness is spreading worldwide. The report called on governments around the world to end homelessness by 2030. The UN last produced a study on the world's homeless population 11 years ago. At that time, it estimated the total at 100 million. But the UN said the number is likely much higher today. It estimates 100 million children alone are now without a home. Recently, UNICEF, the UN's children's agency, warned about children living in and around the city of Mosul, Iraq. It said tens of thousands of them could become homeless as Iraqi forces continue work to take back Mosul from Islamic State militants. In its report, the Department of Housing and Urban Development measured homelessness on a single night. In January 2016, thousands of volunteers spread out across the country. They counted a total of 549,922 homeless individuals. That is down 14% from 6 years ago. Still, the government agency reported increased homelessness in the cities of Los Angeles, Dallas, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. Officials blamed the increase on higher housing prices. Julian Castro is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. He said it is important that more be done to help people find a place to stay for themselves and their families. Every person deserves a safe, stable place to call home, Castro said. In recent years, a major effort has lowered the number of homeless military veterans, he said. While Castro points to some progress in the United States, UN officials say homelessness is now a problem in all countries, rich and poor. Leilani Farha, the top UN official on housing, said homelessness is an issue of life and death importance. The death rate among homeless people ranges from 2 to 10 times higher than for those who are not homeless, she said. The Homeless World Cup of Scotland holds football games to help support efforts to reduce homelessness. The organization puts out reports about homelessness around the world. In the Kenyan capital of Nairobi, 250,000 people do not have a place to stay. Many of them are children and live on the streets. In India, the homeless population is estimated at 78 million. 11 million of that number are street children. Indonesia's homeless population is 3 million, including 28,000 in the capital, Jakarta. In Nigeria, the homeless population is estimated at 24 million. Homeless World Cup blames rapid urbanization and poverty for the high number. Also, many people lost homes because of actions by Boko Haram militants, the group said. In England, 112,070 people declared themselves homeless in 2013. That is a 26% increase from 2009.
Have you ever wanted to grow your own food inside your home? Scientists in Finland have developed a device that may do just that. It lacks soil and does not look like a normal vegetable garden. But the small device, called the cell pod, grows edible plant cells in the home. Lori Reuter is a biologist with the VTT Technical Research Center of Finland. He says that instead of using the complete plant as food, scientists take only a small part of it, cells, and grow them in a bioreactor. These plants have much of the same nutritional value that a real plant has. The edible plant cells, once fully grown, do not look very good. The Finnish researchers say they also need to improve the taste. However, the cell pod can provide important vitamins and antioxidants, which are substances that help your body to be healthy. Lori Reuter adds that the new technology will not replace fields for growing fruits and vegetables. However, the cell pod can help people eat foods that are hard to find or that cannot be made in a sustainable way. In other words, the device could help save natural resources. All you would need to do is add the seed culture to the device, sit back, and then wait. Reuter says the seed culture looks a lot like a very small container filled with coffee. You put it into the device and give it water. The machine does the rest of the work. The researchers hope to have a version of the cell pod on the market in the next 10 years. I'm John Russell.
This is What's Trending. American Vice President-elect Mike Pence saw the Broadway show Hamilton in New York City over the weekend. The play tells the story of Alexander Hamilton, one of America's founding fathers. The show Hamilton is a hip-hop musical. Many of the people who play the historically white founding fathers are African-American or Latino. Just after the show ended Friday night, actor Brandon Victor Dixon gave a speech on stage. The actor spoke directly to Pence. He told Pence that the show's diverse performers are worried about the country's future. He also said he hoped the show had inspired Pence. The speech did not please President-elect Donald Trump. Trump wrote on his Twitter page that the cast of Hamilton should apologize to Pence. Supporters of President-elect Trump also were not happy. They called for a boycott of Hamilton. The hashtag Boycott Hamilton became a trending topic on social media. Mike Pence himself has said that he was not offended or upset by Dixon or the Hamilton cast. And that's What's Trending.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. For nearly 20 years, opioid abuse has been spreading across the United States. Health experts say increasing numbers of Americans are growing physically dependent on pain-killing medicines containing opioids or narcotic drugs. The problem is so great that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is calling opioid use disorder an epidemic. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that from 2000 to 2014, nearly 500,000 Americans died from drug overdoses. CDC officials reported that opioid overdose deaths hit record levels in 2014, with an alarming 14% increase in 1 year. The American Society of Addiction Medicine notes on their website that drug overdose is the leading cause of accidental death in the United States. The website says that in 2014, 47,055 people died nationwide because they took more than the medically recommended amount. Prescription painkillers containing opioids have led to thousands of overdose deaths and stays in hospitals. But until now, researchers have yet to study how this epidemic affects the youngest members of society. Julie Gaither is with the Yale School of Medicine in Connecticut. As an epidemiologist, she studies how diseases spread and how to control them. Gaither is concerned about the huge growth in opioid sales over the past 20 years.
The opioid epidemic has grown exponentially. It really began in the mid-1990s when physicians were encouraged to do a better job of treating chronic pain. In 2014, there were approximately 19,000 deaths that were attributed to opioid medication.
The CDC says that 48 people nationwide in the U.S. die every day from opioid overdoses. And a new study found that over a 16-year period, more than 13,000 children and teenagers were hospitalized for opioid poisonings. Deepa Karmange is another doctor at the Yale School of Medicine. Both she and Gaither looked at hospital records showing children and young people sent home from hospitals. They wanted to find out how many children had been hospitalized in recent years for prescription opioid poisonings.
We found that the rates of hospitalizations for opioid poisonings doubled during 1997 to 2012. We also found that the highest number of hospitalizations were among teenagers, ages 15 through 19. The highest rates of increase in hospitalizations were among our youngest population, which was 1 to 4-year-old children.
Karmange says the way that medicines with opioids are sold to patients needs to change. She also called for changes in the way in which the drugs are marketed and thrown away.
Our national conversation has focused on how to improve the treatment and prevention of opioid misuse and abuse. But we also hope that this conversation focuses on how to safeguard children from this epidemic.
The researchers published their study in JAMA Pediatrics. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.